You are listening to WQED's Voice of the Arts podcast. I'm Emily Brunner, and today I'm on a little field trip. I went to City Theater here, and we are with director Montez Freeland and sound designer Howard Patterson to discuss their run of Pulitzer Prize-winning play Fat Ham here at City Theater. It debuted at the Wilma Theater in Philly, went off-Broadway at the Public in 2022, Broadway in 2023, and was nominated for 5 Tony Awards. This Pittsburgh premiere is at City Theater and will run until March 24th. Montez and Howard, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
So Montez, what is Fat Ham all about? I hear Hamlet, but I'm not sure.
Yes, Fat Ham, I would say, is a remix of Hamlet. So it's the characters who we love from Hamlet, like Hamlet, his uncle Claudius, who is now Rev, his mother, who's the queen, is now Tedra, and Ophelia is Opal, and Horatio is Tio, and Polonius is Rabbi. So it's a family affair, and some of the great characters who we know from Hamlet are in this piece as archetypes, but it is set at a black cookout in the South, in Maryland, and essentially it's the setup of Hamlet, where this young man has lost his father. And in the midst of his grief, his father comes back and says, you have to avenge my death, and you need to kill the person who had me killed, who is now your uncle, who is your new daddy, in a sense. So it already starts off with some high stakes.
There. Oh my gosh. High stakes indeed. And how much of it is connected to Shakespeare and its writing, or is it more just the plot that we're associated with?
It's a bit of the plot. It's a bit of the essence of the characters, in a sense. But really, where Shakespeare comes into play is that Jussi, who is our Hamlet, is a fan of Shakespeare. So he likes to imbibe in reading Shakespeare and reciting it at apropos or not appropriate times in the play. And it's a little bit of his, I would say, his little nerd moment where he nerds out to Shakespeare text, which is completely polar opposite of the world that he lives in.
Yeah, very polar opposite. And almost he sees what's happening and he's like, wait, I've read this before.
Yeah, there's a lot of meta moments inside of the play where the play comments on itself, where the play comments on the audience and the players as well. So that's an exciting aspect of it, because it allows the play to live in this sort of abstract world. So we tried to start that abstraction from the very beginning, from how you're looking at the set to what you're hearing. And it's been a beautiful marriage of collaboration, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And Howard, how did you come into this picture? When you read this play, what did you think? What was your thoughts?
Oh, I wanted to do the show. Once they announced, I was like, I need to do this show. Because barbecues and music plays are hand to hand all the time. So we use a lot of music in this show to also tell the story. A lot of songs, a lot of moments in songs that we use to enhance the story. And in Juice, nerd world, we definitely made it abstract sounds.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And what kind of music? Because it's kind of set in contemporary times, but it is based on a Shakespearean text. So how far do we reference Shakespeare?
Not into music at all. No.
So contemporary?
Yeah, it's more very contemporary. But even there's a lot of flow to it, because even Shakespeare has a lot of flow to his shows, and the music has a nice, smooth, fun beat to it. Just like a Shakespeare show would.
Yeah, and it works well with barbecue, I gotta say. Flow and slow. And how did you guys approach this play? Because it did happen on Broadway. So what did you guys see it on Broadway at all?
I did see the Broadway production, and I left the theater just feeling exuberant and inspired and great and feeling seen. So for me, it was more so about, I didn't want to recreate anything that I saw, but I did want to recreate that feeling that I had when I left the theater. And I knew the play. I read the play. I knew the play, and yet I still left with the idea of being seen, with the thought of, okay, I can go into the world as my true self and as my honest self. So for me, putting it on stage was really about capturing that essence of the piece and not tailor, you know, and tailor making it for this cast, for our space, for the fact that it has to tour. So there are a lot of elements that had to go into the creation of the world. But we have an amazing scenic designer, Sasha Schwartz, who has worked the city quite a few times and around the city of Pittsburgh and beyond. And we knew that we didn't want to do the conventional with this. This play is the most produced play in the country at the moment. And so it's how do we still work inside of the blueprint that James created, but yet still have our own creativity on top of the piece. And so that was the question. And we investigated ways in which we could look at the script from a sort of different angle of this place, this world, that's not trying to be truthful, where they're hiding the truth so much that it feels very sterile, very oversaturated with color, almost like man-made, instead of it actually being the true essence of the piece. So it has a little bit of Pleasantville kind of look to it, which is creepy when things are too plant clean and too manicured and too well. It means something's going on. So we wanted to lean into that.
It sounds like a horror movie where they're trying to hide something behind the gates.
Exactly, exactly. Behind this gate is a lot of secrets. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of secrets in this piece. Mm-hmm. And for culturally, for Black people, you know, keep home at home is something that is pretty much ingrained in us as children of keep the business inside of these gates, inside of these walls. But then what happens when we aren't really acknowledging the truth? Where home is not a place for truth. And that's what Juicy is wrestling with.
Ooh, that's a big thing to wrestle with. Mm-hmm. And with the sound in mind for this kind of show, when you went about doing it, was there a lot already in the text, or were you starting from scratch? Were you like, what do I feel for this moment?
We started from scratch. Like, we really went and looked at the script, and we talked about music for like a whole night, just talked. Like, what kind of music are we listening to? Who are we listening to? The lyrics, if we're using lyrics in the show, like, what lyrics are we using?
Right, because they got to be intentional.
Yeah. So, like, everything has a purpose in the show.
That sounds really cool. And did any of the actors, like, because sometimes, like, they'll be like, ooh, I really, like, liked this piece when I was trying to get into the headspace of Juicy. Did that ever come into play?
Yeah, there was a couple moments where we used a lot of sound effects and songs that they picked to sing and have fun with.
Ooh, yeah, so fun. And this is kind of a dark comedy. Do you guys lean more into the darkness or more into the comedy with this?
I say we lean into all of it.
All of it?
Yeah, I think we lean into all of it for sure. And this cast is so adept at both of being able to have us in stitches and then being able to have us clutch our pearls in the next moment and be like, what is going on? So yeah, I think it lives in both. And I think culturally, people of color, specifically Black people in this country, live in both.
Yes.
And I think that's why we sometimes can laugh at the pain and the trauma, is because we really don't have another alternative unless we wanted to destroy us. And so that's been the blessing of this piece, is that they are big shifts and beat shifts that happen that require skilled people to make it work.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the cast, it's a wonderful group of people. I mean, you've got some debuts, but you've also got some seasoned players. I mean, how did that go about getting them all together?
Yes, it took me a long time to cast this play. And I feel like I saw everybody, and everyone did wonderful work. But it was building this cast. I knew that I needed people who could have fun, but before the talent, I just knew I wanted good people in the room, people with good hearts, people who were going to navigate this tough material with grace and with care for their fellow actor, and with not trying to outshine one another, because everyone gets their moment to shine in this piece. And so I was looking for people who had that heart and who had that care. And then from there, it was a matter of, okay, let's talk about the character and what you can create inside of here. But it's so wonderful to work with people who I've admired for years, like Maria, and for people that I've worked with in the past, like Khalil, and Latrae and Linda and Alexa and two folks who I've never worked with before, Brandon and Jordan. Yeah. It's amazing to just see how they have all come together as a wonderful company and ensemble to create the piece. The fun that you see on stage is legitimate. It is, and contagious. It really is.
Oh, that sounds so wonderful. I always love a tight-knit cast, a cast that take care of each other. Yeah, yeah. And how has previews been going? Because it's preview time.
Yeah, previews are so helpful.
Yes.
I think that they are so educational. It's a bit of split brain where I'm looking at the actors, I'm looking at the tech, I'm listening, and I'm also listening to the audience as well to go, what are they responding to? What are they connecting with? What's not really connecting with them? And if I care about if it's not connecting with them at all. And so we're so lucky to a degree, I would say. Our bodies may feel the other way, but we have these great hours of rehearsal before every preview, which I don't think our audience knows, that we rehearse for about almost 5 hours before putting those changes into a live show that evening, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. So it's a grueling schedule, but it's for the better because it allows us to get in and really become granular and tweak, you know, even sound cues about, okay, that's the right volume, but is that the right part of the song that we should pick, or, you know, or lighting, like, okay, what's the time on that? And to see lighting and sound and costumes and scenic come together to go, okay, my cue is 1.92 seconds long. Okay, the light has to be that long too. And, you know, and then what's the costume change doing? So it like I said, it's been a wonderful collaborative process.
Yeah. And have you been changing stuff on the fly, Howard?
Oh, all the time. All the time. this is like, this whole process is literally art with friends. Because everyone in the room is so connected. So it's like, I'll change a sound cue by the second, by the point second. And then lights are like, okay, he did this, I'm gonna do the math, I'm gonna do these point seconds. And the projection is like, oh, he changed it, I'm gonna do this. And we won't even talk to each other, it just happens. Yeah. And it's such a great atmosphere that Montez made, and it's like, it's just so much fun.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it sounds fun. I'm a little jealous, gotta admit. Wow. Can you tell me a little bit about yourselves and how you guys started in theater? Because you guys have a pretty big background.
Yeah. I am kind of not new in theater, but I didn't do theater in high school. I went to community college, and I just walked into a theater. And they was like, you'll be stage manager. And I was like, I'm pretty bad at that. and then I loved it, like the sound aspect. And then I came to Point Park. Graduated Point Park, and then I've just been freelancing until now. I'm a full-time professor at Pitt.
Wow.
Yeah.
You sound design at Pitt.
Yep.
Nice. In the basement.
In the basement.
Very nice, very nice. And what about you, Montez?
I'm an old theater dude. No, I found theater, or theater found me, when I was 6 years old. So it's been over 30 years that I've really been doing this consistently. So from being a child actor to being a child playwright, ironically enough, which is, there aren't a lot of them, but I was having plays produced when I was 14 and 15 years old. And then eventually, I grew up in Baltimore at the Arena Players Theater, which was an amazing incubation process for artists. And they sent us around the world with tools that we're still using today to be successful. And I came to Point Park here in Pittsburgh and stayed in Pittsburgh and have worked in many different capacities in theater because I love every aspect of theater. You know, I'm always calling Howard about, hey, I want to do the sound design for this project I'm working on. And I'm, you know, I just love every part of theater, and I get bored kind of quickly. So I'm like, well, what can I learn about lights? What can I learn about costumes? And so all of that has brought me to back to City Theater now as the co-artistic director. And I'm grateful for my training. I'm grateful for all of the gigs I've ever had, the small to the large, because I think it allows me to do this job with a different sensibility that maybe artistic directors of the past didn't always lead with. They may have had it, but maybe they didn't lead with it.
And speaking of which, I mean, you have two plays coming up. You have Fishy Woo Woo, which I talked about with Mark. And then you also have at the Pittsburgh Public. Coffin. Yeah, The Coffin Maker. Oh, my gosh. You're busy.
Yes. Blessed and busy. Busy and blessed. Yeah, it's going to be a year. But you know what? That's fine because last year I chilled. So, you know, I like being busy. I like being creative. I also like taking breaks.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to allow my artistry to thrive and for Pittsburgh to be so welcoming to me and so open and being such a place for me to grow as an artist, to learn as an artist, to fail as an artist, and to get back up on my feet. And they go, okay, that was not great, but we don't hate you, you know. You can just try again. Yeah, exactly. So I'm very grateful for this year of art. But really, I'm grateful for the year that there's so much art that has Black people at the fulcrum of the stories, and not just on the stage, but behind the scenes as well. That to me is like that this dream of seeing Pittsburgh's arts community shift is happening, has happened, still has a way to go, but I'm not going to act like it's not in motion.
Howard, how do you feel about that too? Because I think I've met maybe one Black sound designer besides you, and that's
it is a rare thing that is changing, because I have two students of color that are actually coming up really soon, and you can see the boom happening. Like because it's also a good thing to see another teacher of color in the classroom, because it inspires other people to be like, oh, he did that, so I can do that. Because that's why I didn't start in theater, because I was like, I don't know what this is. Maybe if I had a person of color that was in theater, I'd be like, oh, I can do that. But now I want to be that inspiration to others.
And teaching is a great way to do that.
It's such a great thing. Like watching them figure out something that you taught them, they're like, oh, I can do that. And it's like the seeing that click and that glint in their eye, you're like, oh, wow, yeah. Then you have a future.
And if you've been doing all this stuff at Pitt too, right? The I forget what their theater's called down there.
The Heyman in the Studio Theater.
Yeah.
It's been a year and a half now. Been designing and also mentoring like most of the shows there.
Yeah. If the shows there, how does that work? Is it mostly students that work in the shows and then you just kind of mentor them and help them, or is it sometimes that you got to pick up the buck too?
It's a little 50-50. It's when I see a student is ready for a show, I'm like, go for it. And like this season, we had most of the sound design is all students, because a lot of them are literally 1 year with me. They're like, I can do this. And I'm like, you can't do this. And it's been really, really nice. So even our musical, Spring Awakening, coming, it's all student design.
Hey, that's great. That's amazing. Congrats. I mean, that speaks to your teaching.
Yeah, I'm trying.
That's amazing. And we also have to talk about City Theater's upcoming season, 2024-2025, which is its 50th. Oh my gosh, that's incredible. So what's on the ticket? Can you tell us what's up?
Oh, we celebrating. We are celebrating. 50 years of theater making is no easy feat. And especially the last five. So to be still standing, not just standing, but thriving, leaning on our values of community and collaboration and creativity and the principles of equity, diversity, inclusion, and accessibility, I think is what has kept City Theater here. So we're celebrating that. And so we're going to look back, but we're also looking forward. So we're still doing our work when it comes to new play development and initiatives and making sure that new play work lives in Pittsburgh in a rich way, in a decided way. But we're going to look back on some of the shows that made City Theater who we are, and we're going to do a reading series reuniting cast and bringing artists back who've worked here over the last 50 years. We're also going to do a big benefit late spring, in the spring of 2025, and we have a phenomenal season of plays new to the region as well. And new initiatives, a Halloween show, which is called Ghosted Tales from Carson Street. And so it's a great time to connect with a new audience and to really lean into that spooky time of year with libations and ghost stories and myths and music, and offer a different idea of what theater can be. Because I think theater still scares some people when you say the word. And so it's how do we broaden our audience and broaden what theater is. And that's what City Theater has done for 50 years. And it's just wonderful to see the amount of people who have had a hand on that. And it's our time to celebrate everyone.
It's going to be so fun for a celebration. We just celebrated our 50th last year, so yeah, it was fun, too. I know.
There was a boom. There was a boom in Pittsburgh in 1974, 75 of arts organizations that were founded and that really changed the arts ecosystem here in Pittsburgh. From Cantu Repertory Theater is also celebrating their 50th anniversary. Yeah. Pittsburgh Public. Maybe WQED, I think, as well.
QED, FM was 50th last year, 70th for the whole thing.
Yes, yes. WYEP, I think, as well. Yeah, so it's really a celebration for the city, and we would love for the entire city to celebrate and think about what does the next 50 years need, and we need audience. Yes. We need engagement. We need artists to stay in Pittsburgh. We need people to continue to tell their story, and also for folks to have patience, because it doesn't all happen right away.
Yeah, don't go to New York. Stay here, please.
Stay here.
I would love to talk to you guys all day, but I can't. So Montez and Howard, anything else to talk about Fat Ham?
I am just so grateful to be a part of this team, to be a part of the creativity that's in the room, to have the responsibility to tell this story as a Black queer man in this world where sometimes I feel every day I'm being attacked, and yet I can go into a dark theater and make folks sit down for an hour and 50 minutes and say, just put yourself in someone else's shoes. And maybe you'll leave out with a little bit more empathy than you had before. No one's asking you to change your whole world just to accommodate somebody else. But what would happen if you just made space for someone else? And so I'm grateful that we can make space with this piece. So I hope everyone comes to see it, because you're going to miss a good show if you don't come see it. You'll be hearing about it for years and years to come. You're going to have to go down to Fayetteville, Arkansas to see the next part of it.
Well, thank you guys so much for talking with me. It's been awesome.